And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus. I feel like this is a big day of a solo flight, and that's because Dean Wysocki's out today, and so it's me. But I'll have a guest, and I'll gratefully be joined by Addison, who is our sound engineer. So, Addison, from time to time, I may have to call on you for a little bit of help. Hope that's going to be okay in there.
I'm always here, but if I'm not, panic.
Then I will. That also means that we will just be a continuous commercial station for a while till you come back.
Yeah.
But we'll be okay.
That'll be okay.
So I mentioned last week that I have a flat farmer from Florida. And for those on the live stream, you can see her. She's this little paper farmer. Her name is Franny. And Franny has been spending a week hanging out with me here learning about agriculture in North Dakota. So she can send her report back to an FFA chapter in Florida. Let me just repeat this. Can I have to do it slowly? Flat farmer Franny is from an FFA chapter in Florida. You didn't think I could do that, did you? But here we are. And based on the weather, I think I'm going to have to make her a little paper coat. She might get a little chilly. The weather has certainly changed. Our afternoon, we're seeing the rain drying up. That's happened for me already. Snow is supposed to be mixing back in tonight with snow showers late into Wednesday. Winds are going to pick up as well. Most recently, you will see that winter weather advisory was put into effect up and down the Red River Valley. So we're seeing that from the Canadian border to South Dakota, as far west as Jamestown, as far east as past Detroit Lakes. So what you're going to see is that starting at 6 o'clock tonight, and that's going to go till 6 o'clock on Wednesday. You can expect snow accumulations between 1 to 5 inches. Chances are high for us. We're in that 2 or 3 inch situation here around Fargo. As I look to the Devil's Lake Basin and to the northwest of that, that is a winter storm warning. And they will see the heavier snowfall plus higher wind gusts. For us here in the valley, we may see winds gusting as high as 45 miles an hour. That'll be primarily along and west of the Red River Valley. So again, that's going to start tonight at 6 o'clock, go to 6 o'clock tomorrow night. Potential is there for slippery road conditions. Make sure, just like we talked about yesterday, getting your winter survival kit ready. And I really want to say a big thank you to Justin Storm. He was keeping up to date for me on the fact that there is now a winter weather advisory that has been put into effect. If you don't follow Justin on Facebook, please do. He's pretty helpful to me, just the same way that we can be helpful to you with weather right here from WDAY. And all right, flat farmer Franny, I don't know. She looks pretty confident, but I still think if this is a Florida gal, I'm going to have to build her a little coat. Maybe I can use some post-it notes over a commercial break and take care of that. So folks, if you still have your rain gauges out, and some of you might, I actually already put mine in. And I have one of the WDAY official gauges. It's used by the National Weather Service, produced by Productive Alternatives in Fergus Falls, Minnesota. If you have those gauges out, and especially if you got one from us here at WDAY, would you please share your rain totals with me? My best judgment, because I don't have the gauge out anymore, is that right now my half-inch puddles are full. So if that makes any sense at all, I can say that I have at least a half-inch of rain right now. And with the ground not frozen, the chances are high that with potentially more wet snow, we're going to, and a little bit more rain mixed in with that, we're going to continue to sop up that moisture and recharge our soil, which we certainly need. We don't want to go into this fall and freeze up completely dry, because that'll just be tough on us next spring for planting and so much more. So if you have rain totals, you are welcome to go ahead and send those emails to me, ag@flagfamily.com. You can reach me today on air at 701-293-9000. That's the Red Wing Shoe line. And above all, some of you just are very helpful and send me text messages or direct messages on social media, and that way I can keep up with what's going on with the rain. Or if you are starting to already see snow in your region, it's a little bit early yet, but again, as you get into that Devil's Lake neighborhood later on today, you all are going to start to see some snowfall. Well, weather aside, don't forget that you can be watching what we're doing on our live stream every day. We do that on Facebook, on YouTube, and Acres TV. So when you have the opportunity to check out what that flat farmer Franny looks like from Florida, she's on the live stream today. And we'll have photos there from today's guest. Joining me later will be Beth Marcotte, She is with Marcotte Creamery in Illinois, and I'm excited to talk to another dairy farmer. It's been a long time since I got to spend hours in a barn milking cows. And when you look at the website for the creamery, you know, they are not just milking cows, but we're talking about cheeses and so much more. It's going to be an exciting process to hear what they do, how it happens. I think it's also kind of neat to bring in dairy from unexpected places. Illinois is not always the first spot that someone might think of with dairy cattle. So we'll get to all of that and so much more, to some of today's headlines. Well, frankly, I'm going to start out with some of yesterday's headlines, just in the fact that we didn't get to even talk about all of them yesterday. We had plenty going on once again, especially as we prepared for this storm. But just a few announcements for you there. Nationwide Insurance has reached out to 58 rural fire departments in 32 states to help provide critical fire equipment. One of the things that they are doing a great job of sharing happens to be the aluminum grain bin rescue tubes that are used in an entrapment situation with a grain bin. Nationwide has been doing this for a number of years, making sure that rural fire departments are safe. It's about an 11-year-old program, and they have saved really hundreds of lives. At least 13 every year have been happening. They've been able to make sure that with the rescue tubes that go out, they provide a safe environment, not only for the victim, but the rescuers who have to go into the bin in order to try to save the folks who are in there. It's kind of like working in quicksand. Local fire departments that have received these rescue tubes from Nationwide Insurance would include the Freud, Montana Fire Department in eastern Montana, Golva Rural Fire Protection District. They are in Golva, North Dakota. Also, the North Marshall Fire Department in Britton, South Dakota, the Hannaford Fire Department of Hannaford. And then lastly, Salem, South Dakota. High school students and community members did receive some presentations down there on bin safety. Addison, you caught my attention by saying, we have someone who's calling in. Who have you got?
All right. We've got Todd calling in here. Todd, go ahead.
Yeah. I'm in southeast Fargo, just east of Discovery School, and I checked my productive alternative rain gauge. I emptied it yesterday. I checked it this morning after it quit raining, I suppose about 11 o'clock. And I had 1.34 inches.
1.34. That's outstanding.
Yep. And I also heard from another weather expert in the area with regards to the those rain gauges. And they said, yep, once it freezes, you can go ahead and take the tube out and let it collect the snow, and then melt down your snow to see your water equivalent.
Todd, you make a great point. Daryl Richeson, who is North Dakota State climatologist and also the director for NDON, which is our Ag Rural Weather Station network, has pointed that out as well. You can take that center tube out. Thank you for that reminder, Todd. I'd forgotten about it. But if you take that center tube out, it's now a measuring device for the snowfall. And Daryl has long time been a reporter for the National Weather Service, and that was one of the ways he described being able to catch his snowfall totals. So Todd, I think what you're telling me is I should put my gauge back out.
Yeah, I've got another question for you.
Okay.
With regards to taking out the middle tube. Now I'm assuming that you also take out or take the top off it.
Yep. That big cap on the top that holds the center tube.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, take that off too.
Yep. Take that off too. That's what I would say that you would want to do that, because then those measurement increments on the side of the larger tube on that gauge would work very, very well. And yes, that is a really nice gauge from Productive Alternatives. Todd, you said 1.34 inches for you. I did hear over lunch that south of Absaraka, they had gotten about 1.3 inches. So it sounds like a little bit more rain on that I-94 corridor.
Well, south of I'm about, well, I-94 is about 19th, and I'm on 39th, so quite a bit south of that, just north of Rose Creek.
So great that you're picking up some rainfall down there. You aren't going to get time for the lawn to green up because it's going to get cold, but I'm glad to see you getting some moisture for it. Thank you, Todd. Really appreciate Todd calling in today to share all of that. That is an excellent deal. Well, folks, we are so climbing up on our time in the hour where we need to go catch up with some news. But before we go, one more thing I want to make sure to share. California voters in our most recent election went ahead and shot down a Sonoma County, overwhelmingly shot down, by the way, controversial ballot phase that was going to phase out large farms in the meat industry. Believe it or not, in the Sonoma Valley, there are actually a number of large poultry and dairy operations. And this measure would have eliminated economic development to the tune of $381 million, significant jobs and wages. And so the voters in Sonoma County said that's not going to happen, and they stopped it from going forward. Meanwhile, over in Denver, they also voted down a proposal for a slaughterhouse ban that would have closed the nation's largest lamb processor, Superior Farms. The processor was joined by multiple livestock groups, not just with lamb and sheep, but also meatpacking worker unions, and they had a large campaign to fight back on that measure. It was sponsored by Pro Animal Future, a group opposed to animal slaughter. I know you've heard me say this before. I'm not shy about saying that I would strongly check out who some of those organizations are when it comes to animal activism. They're not the fair players that you think they are. And first of all, somebody called Pro Animal Future tells me that's likely a front for a larger organization that's spending money. They are well into the $600 million range when it comes to the dollars they spend to take away the meat off your plate every year. With that, we're going to come back with our guest again. That's Beth Marcotte. She's with Marcotte Creamery in Illinois. Stay tuned. Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. Thanks for joining me today. I'm Bridget Riedel, Ag Director, and happy to have you along. Hey, for those of you who are out on the road, keep in mind that there is now a winter weather advisory in effect starting tonight at 6 o'clock. So depending on how far you need to get before that starts, that will encompass the Red River Valley. As you move north and west, especially into the Devil's Lake Basin, you are going to see more of a winter storm developing. We're going to have some snowfall anywhere from 1 to 5 inches across the region. Likelihood in the Fargo area is probably 2 inches, maybe a little bit more. But we're going to have some high winds gusting as high as 45 miles an hour, primarily along and west of the Red River Valley. Also, thanks to a caller from Horace who let us know that their rainfall total is 1.4 inches. That might just be in their official WDAY weather rain gauge made by Productive Alternatives down in Fergus Falls, Minnesota. Want to say a great big thank you and hello to our guests today. I have joining me Amy and Beth Marcotte. I'm afraid I was saying that wrong, and I apologize, ladies. How are you today?
Great. How are you?
Good. I'm from out of the region, so I say names wrong until you tell me otherwise.
It's no problem. We've had much worse.
Well, I'm out of your region. And speaking of, I just know you're in Illinois. So where in Illinois?
Yeah, sure. We're in Greenville, Illinois. We're about 45 miles east of downtown St. Louis. So we're more southern Illinois.
Oh, you're like in the banana belt. So tell us a little bit about your operation. This is a very recently started dairy farm. You don't necessarily have the story to say grandpa started this farm generations ago, correct?
No, actually we're a 7-generation dairy farm. And so my family came from Switzerland in 1840, and they came up the Mississippi River, and they ended in this area because they were looking for land that had hills for their animals. So the Marcotte family brought a Jersey calf on the boat with them. And we have always had Jersey cows. Now, if you saw Beth and I standing, you would see that we're 5'3", and my whole family is 5'3", so that's probably why we have the shorter cow. But we do love her, and our family has always loved being a part of that dairy culture and having Jersey cattle. Now, Beth, you can tell maybe a little bit about how we came back.
So Amy and I, Amy's number one and I'm number two of four girls. Our parents had four girls. And so it was just kind of known that we probably wouldn't come back to the farm. And actually, our parents encourage us very strongly to go and get our education, live a life that doesn't bind you to working 7 days a week and snow, rain, etc. And so we both left for 10 years. We have our undergraduate degrees and master's degrees. And in about 2007, our parents started having lots of discussions about just what's the next step for our farm. Do we sell? Do we go big? Do we do something to add more value to our cow's milk? What is it that we really want to do? So with a lot of thinking, a lot of planning, a lot of researching, a lot of visiting a lot of other creameries, we decided that we would really like to try to make cheese with our Jersey cow milk. So very unique. And whenever we started in June 2010, there were not very many creameries in the state of Illinois. And so we traveled other places to learn about cheese making. So we're almost 15 years into making cheese, and we're learning and growing and enjoying and being innovative and creative with our cows and our product and our land to take care of all of that the best that we can.
Okay. My former dairy farmer's heart is extremely proud right now of all of these things that are going on. And I have lots of those questions before I even get to the cheese making and the expansion that you've done with beef and so forth. When you mentioned that you a Jersey animal came from Switzerland, a Jersey cow, when the farm began 7 generations ago, are those genetics still on the farm today, or have things changed over, you might say, where you're using very different Jersey cow genetics now?
Yeah, I would say that we don't have documentation of that same Jersey cow is still on our farm, but all of our cows are registered with the National Jersey Association. And so we have kept track records for as long as the association has been in existence in America. So wow. Just really neat to see how our dad, whenever he was 17 years old, he took over the farm after he graduated high school, and he's been here since. He's now 72. He still works every day on the farm, and we don't want it any other way besides that. So we're very grateful.
You know, when people think of dairy, the first that comes to mind is Holsteins, the black and white cow. Mm-hmm. But Jerseys have a place in dairy, and they've got some really great traits. Any of those that come to mind, for me, the first thing I think of is they're a very docile animal. But are there some other traits that you really appreciate about that breed?
Yeah, there's a long list. They have higher butter fat and higher protein in their milk. And so for us, whenever we make cheese, we actually get a better yield off of every pound of milk per pound of cheese. So that's one advantage. They're also very aggressive to feed and feed efficiencies. Jersey cows really, really, really love to eat, and they're not very picky about that. We really like the Jerseys also since they're smaller framed. They have a less environmental impact. And that's not something that we've, you know, like, oh, we're only going to do Jerseys because of this, but we also are a grazing herd. And so, that makes it all the better for us and for the quality of the cow's milk. They are very docile. And they're also very curious, which can be a very good thing, but it could also be sometimes a little bit troublesome.
They're the first out of the fence because, hey, what's that over there?
Yeah. They go tell all their other friends that the fence is open, and then they all go. So, yes.
Yeah. So because there's a good chunk of our listening audience who's not from a farm background, one of the questions I actually get occasionally is, what does a dairy cow eat? Because every image you have of that animal is just a green pasture, but it's not always a green pasture year round here in North Dakota, nor for you. So what's a diet or a nutrition plan look like for a great Jersey cow?
Yeah. So we are primarily grass-based. So whenever we have grass in the pastures, they get to graze any time they want. And then we also make hay. We also buy in hay. So just grass that is cut from the field, dried or fermented, to feed to the cow, to the cows year round. We like to feed grain with our cows. So sometimes it's corn, sometimes it's soybean hulls, sometimes it's just a variety of things that also contain other vitamins and minerals. If we strictly just had our dairy cows on grass, they wouldn't get the proper amount of nutrients, vitamins and minerals, particularly in different times of year. Clearly winter, whenever it's the heat of the summer, those nutritional values are kind of depleted out of the grass. So we need to make sure that they have a balanced diet. We don't feed a total mixed ration. So we don't have a huge tractor with a huge mixer that mixes all of the foods, all the different feeds together. Since we live closer to St. Louis, Missouri, there's a lot of farmers around here that will use distiller's grain from the leftover beer, but we don't do that. We did at one point in time. We don't do that currently. And so dairy cows are just really amazing animals to really consume a lot of the byproducts that we as humans can't. And so our method is pretty simplistic, but there are other places that use those byproducts a lot more than we do, and which is really great. We do use our byproduct of whey after we make cheese. So, and that is in a liquid form. We feed that back into our herd as a way of for us just to not waste anything here on the farm.
But I tell you what, it is so much fun to hear with the differences that everybody does with their animals, with their dairy cows and the different breeds that you have, because I'm thinking that Jersey, she's probably making milk that's really ideal for cheese, maybe versus a Holstein for fluid milk. But we're going to ask about those questions and especially about cheese production and the agritourism that you do when we return. So it's the bottom of the hour. We're going to take a chance to listen to some local news. And when we come back, we'll keep talking with Amy and Beth Marcoot, and that's with Marcoot Creamery in Illinois. Welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus, and thanks for joining us, whether it's here on the air or watching us on the live streams, Facebook, YouTube, and Acres TV. You can find us there every day. And additionally, you can find us joined by guests. A great guest today happened to be Amy and Beth Marcoot. They're with the Marcoot Creamery in Greenville, Illinois. And ladies, just want to say thanks so much for joining us for this conversation about dairy today, because again, I'm all about cheese. I have no problem having this talk. So, and that's one of the things that you do. You have gone ahead and made this, I don't know if I should say leap, but are making your own cheese. And how did that start? Is that a fairly recent endeavor?
Yeah, I mean, like Beth said, in 2007, my parents were considering what the transition plan, and they really didn't think any of their daughters would want to come back to the farm. And whenever they started talking about maybe selling the farm or what they should do, we started saying, well, what if we came back? What would it need to look like? And we're not a large operation by any means. Whenever I was in high school in the late 90s, my dad was milking about 150 Jersey cows. And so we're not milking thousands of animals. And my dad said, well, I really think that you either need to become a large operation and you need to add value to your milk. And so we decided to build a creamery, and we often tease that we do what every good farming generation does, which is borrow against everything mom and dad ever worked for to continue the farm. And we did just that, and we built the creamery, and we started making cheese in March of 2010, and we started selling to the public in June of 2010, and a leap it was. You are right about that, because one of the things that our co-op their rule is that if you do anything other than sell your milk to them, they cut you off for life. And so on June 5th of 2010, we sort of jumped off a cliff, and we hoped that it wouldn't be Amy and Beth writing in the family Bible that we messed it up. And so so far we have it. But anyway, so yeah, we started making cheese with our cow's milk, and we have actually diversified our channels a little bit. We sell obviously to like retailers like Whole Foods and in the Midwest region and other grocery chains and then a lot of restaurants and universities in our region. But we started making about 4 years ago. We launched a brand in the pet space, and we make ice cream and a healthy treat and cheese for dogs. And so that has allowed us to diversify a little bit and still continue. The goal is to continue our family farm. Beth has three little boys, and Ben, Luke, and Cooper. And Cooper is 2, and Ben is 9, and Luke is 6. And the other day, Ben told me that they've decided that Cooper can drive the skid steer whenever he gets older, because he likes to push up hay with mom so much. And so, I mean, whether they stay and take it over or not, we don't know, but we want to give them the opportunity. So
I would say you have made an incredibly sustainable situation that's going to continue to happen for those boys, because from the looks of things that, and again, I'm not close by in your neighborhood, but I've been able to look through your website and some of the things that you've done, but it's not as though you're just making a Gouda. You're making a lot of different cheeses. And what's the length of time? Is there one that's, certainly the aged Gouda takes a lot longer than some of the younger cheeses, so to speak, or what does that look like in that process? How much cheese do you have aging at a time?
Well, I mean, it depends really. During COVID, we had lots of cheese aging whenever all the restaurant closures happened. And you know, that was only supposed to last for like 2 weeks, I think. That happened, we had lots of cheese aging, but we were able to put some of that into cheeses that can age longer at that time. But right now we really know that what we're making, we're going to sell. And our aged cheeses might age 6 months to a year. Some of them will age up to 18 months, where our fresh cheese curds, we made those yesterday and we sold them yesterday. And so it just depends on what cheese we're making. The Goudas and Havartis, they typically age 4 to 6 weeks. And like cheddars, they're really good at 4 to 6 weeks as well. Unless we want a sharp cheddar, then that's good at about 6 months. So just depends on what cheese we're making.
Now, when you mentioned the ice cream line, and I swear, even though I was making some notes here, you're talking about making ice cream. There's the Doggo's brand that's for pets.
That's right.
But there's an ice cream line for people too, right? I mean, I don't just have to worry about it for Fido.
Yeah, that's right. Well, actually, to the very well-known, not so secret is that our dog ice cream is just human ice cream in a different cup. And so nice. We sell to Petco and things like that. It's actually a clean label, human grade ice cream. It's just in a different cup. So it can be for a scoop for you, a scoop for Fido. but we do make ice cream for humans as well. And we sell that regionally as well.
When you're doing all of these projects, you've got, you sent us a picture of a beautiful charcuterie board, and which, you know, in my world growing up, that was just a meat and cheese tray, and grandma said, get the extra fancy Ritz crackers to go with it, right? Now
that's
we have a
right.
board. So you have the charcuterie, you have the ice cream, you've got beef. Okay, so first of all, does all of this ship, because I've heard you mention several stores in which you're able to ship to, but are you doing direct to consumers? So in time for the holidays, people should have probably already gotten their orders into you if they want them in time for Christmas and so forth?
Well, so we currently just ship direct to consumer for our cheese gift boxes. So we do hundreds and thousands of gift boxes each year for Christmas time. And it's not too late for Christmas. On our website, people can go there and fill it out. It actually has a date selector. So if you're like, I just need to get the Christmas list checked off of my list, you go there. And if you wanted to order today, you could actually select it whenever you wanted it to be delivered in December. So we make it try to make it really easy for that. We also do a lot of corporate gifting for gift boxes, and they're just a really, really great gift that really everybody loves cheese. So it really is something that, we get so excited about doing our gift boxes, and actually it's just really, not sure what the word right now is, but it is amazing that people choose to put our product and our name in their Christmas meal or Thanksgiving meal, and we get to be part of their family. And so it's just so neat for us to experience that too.
Well, I think they trust you. I mean, I see your story and what you've been doing, and I think there's a lot of trust and knowing who you are and how you're producing it. Mm-hmm. One of the things that's also on your website is you're raising beef, and some would think, oh, perfect. They've already got the dairy cows. It's just going to be beef from a Jersey animal. But wait, there's more. Exactly how did you get the Wagyu to become a part of the whole herd situation?
So I read a research article. So just briefly.
Well, let me just say real quick. Sure. So I run the creamery and the business side of things, and Beth runs the farm. And Beth will often come and say, Amy, I have an idea. And I go, oh my goodness, how much is this going to cost?
Yes.
And so this is how this all started. Beth came in and said, Amy, I have an idea. And I said, oh gosh, how much is it going to cost, Beth? And then she had read a research article.
I've read some research articles from a few different universities that have been studying the crosses of Jersey Wagyu, or, you know, different Wagyu crosses with a dairy. And so I started doing that probably about 8-9 years ago. And we've grown our beef herd. So we have currently a lot of the beef we process is our F1. So it's first generation. So it's a 50% Jersey, 50% Wagyu. And one of the reasons why I wanted to do that is because these articles were mentioning that Wagyu and Jersey is number one and number two in beef tenderness. And Jersey beef usually marbles really well. It takes a little bit longer in age to get there rather than 18 months. It takes a good 22, 24 months to raise them, which is no big deal because we've raised it that way our whole life. So I wanted to step into this. We had been breeding a lot of also sex semen with our Jersey cows. So we are guaranteed that whenever we artificially inseminate, about a 90-95% chance of having a heifer. And then once you get so good at that and you have a lot of calves on the ground, you get kind of an influx of replacement heifers, which is not a bad idea, not a bad thing. But I just thought that we have really great beef with our Jersey beef. Let's think of somewhere, how can we make it even better? So that Jersey Wagyu is definitely different than just the 100% Jersey. With the herd, I also have a cow-calf herd with our Wagyu that I'm working on building that so that we have a second generation with 75% Wagyu, and then we'll get to the third generation, which would be 86.5% Wagyu. So we're building. It all takes time. And the beef is just very, very good, very tender, very, a lot of flavor. And so we enjoy doing that too. Because we like beef.
I was going to say, you said all the right things. Tender, flavorful. Yay, let's have more beef. Okay, with a side of cheese, I might add.
Yeah.
Ladies, if folks would like to know more about you, see your social media, your website, how do they find you?
Sure. Our social media on Facebook and Instagram is Marcoot Jersey Creamery. Our website is www.marcootjerseycreamery.com. And yeah.
That's awesome. And we've got your website up. So especially if you've been watching the live stream, you can go ahead and find that. Addison's scrolling it. And now I want nothing more than cheese and crackers. So thank you again for joining me today. It's really great to meet you. And Amy and Beth, you took the time out of your hectic day to be with us. So thanks for that.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Excellent. Folks, don't go anywhere. I'm going to give you another little recap of the weather. We'll run through some headlines and be right back. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. So glad that you're here today. Thank you for joining me, because Dean's gone, so you're just getting a lot of ag news. Although previous co-host Justin Storm was super helpful, and he sent me some updates that he's also posting on his Facebook page. So if you don't follow Justin Storm, please do. And Justin shared with me something that was a recent update, and that is a winter weather advisory has been issued, and it is now in effect from 6 p.m. tonight until 6 p.m. tomorrow on Wednesday. They are expecting snow accumulations. It says 1 to 5 inches, but I think the Fargo-Moorhead area is somewhere more around that 2-inch mark. And from what we've heard from rainfall totals from a couple of listeners, we're already well over an inch, anywhere from 1.3 to 1.4 inches of rainfall prior to this coming in. This snow band will also bring with it some heavy wind, about 45 miles an hour, especially on the west and western edge of the Red River Valley. As you move to the north central part of North Dakota, the Devil's Lake Basin, there you are seeing more of a winter storm warning. And those folks definitely going to see more wind, more heavier accumulations. And that is all updated as of close to noon today. We'll see if anything changes throughout the night. We all wanted the moisture to come. And it's nice that the ground isn't frozen so that we can continue to get whatever rainfall we have to soak into the ground. As I said earlier, here in northern Cass County, it looks to me like the half-inch puddles are full. But some of you south of me might be getting some more. And for those who want to help out on days like this where maybe Dean is gone, or we certainly are going to be planning ahead for a day that we can both be in studio, I still need to find an assistant ag director. I don't need just one. I need many of you. I'm looking for students who can help me out throughout the next year being in studio. I'm looking for an ag student about once a month to come in and join me on the show. I would have you do the headlines just like we've done today. We'd probably wind up doing some of the weather reports. And above all, we'd be interviewing guests. If you are looking for a description of it and or an application, you can go ahead and just email me, ag@flagfamily.com, and I will make sure to get back to you with the application. And for those of you, if you are still out on the road today and if you're seeing some changing weather and or if you've got some rainfall that you want to report, you can also reach us on the Red Wing Shoe Shoe Line, 701-293-9000. Okay, so many things that are going on with announcements and so much more. Let's not forget some of our headlines out there. One of them is that a little fun fact for those of you listening. 2/3 of the world's food today comes from just 9 plants. 9 plants are the basis of the majority of the world's diet. And they are sugarcane. I know Addison's paying attention. He's probably going to quiz me on this one day.
I'm writing down
notes. So sugarcane, corn, rice, wheat, potatoes, soybeans, oil palm fruit, sugar beet, and cassava. I've been asked a couple times already, what's cassava? To my knowledge, it is a root mostly found in African nations that a lot of diets are based off. Cassava is a well-known portion of diets in other parts of the country. But when farmers are raising these crops, there's often different varieties, hybrids, and so forth. And as the world climates change and as people's food choices change and science improves what we have for plants, these plants need to be stored somewhere. And there's a spot in Norway. It's called the Salborg Global Seed Vault. All the Norwegians in the region just started clapping and cheering, well, quietly, under the table probably, because they aren't likely to do some sort of an outburst like that. But nonetheless, the Norwegians are saving all of this seed in a state-of-the-art vault. This vault was actually opened in about 2008. And right now, it is a vault that holds the temperatures at 0 degrees. It is an ice-covered cavern inside of a sandstone mountain. When you take seed there to be stored, you do not lose ownership of it. You continue to own it, and it can be brought out and used, replanted, because it still has its germination and as well as its biome and fungi activity to it. So it's just a place to secure in case we should ever have plant pandemics or if we should run into problems with any other things such as global warming and so much more. Thanks for joining me. Looking forward to tomorrow. Got another great lineup of guests, including some folks to talk about the Soy Nextile Design Challenge, fabrics from soybeans. We'll learn about that tomorrow. But first, the Jay Thomas Show is next.